become in a position where you hear the developments and you hear people from your team coming to you with recommendations. Being far from the trenches is not a good position.
I'm happy to tell you about one of the industry's best kept secrets, an event designed for global brand owners by global brand owners. It's the WFA's Global Marketer Week, the event for international marketers. Every year it's hosted in a different market, and in May it sees the event return to Toronto, boasting one of the most senior lineups of clients on stage as well as in the audience. Listen to global CMOs from InBev, IBM, Nissan, PepsiCo and MasterCard, and meet with delegates from the 150 brand owners in the WFA's membership. We have an offer specifically for you, a discounted fee for listeners to the Shiny New Object podcast. So go to gmctoronto2024.com. That's gmctoronto2024.com and use the discount code WFA24AUTOCREA. I'll read that again. That's WFA24AUTOCREA. And that will get you a lovely discount. All right. See you there.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a podcast about the future of data-driven marketing. Every week or so, I have the pleasure and the absolute privilege of interviewing our industry's leaders about what is going to happen next in data-driven marketing. And I'm on a call with Emre Achikel. Sorry, Emre, I didn't do a good job of that. But you're Global Head of Data-Driven Marketing at Bayer. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Could you give the audience a bit of background on you if they don't already know what you do?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the invite. Indeed, as you say, I'm the Global Head of Data-Driven Marketing in Bayer Consumer Health for the last 4 years. And I'm located in Switzerland. Before that, I was almost 15 years in Procter & Gamble, having IT roles, e-commerce channel roles, and digital marketing roles. And right now, I'm in charge of basically leveraging data to drive marketing effectiveness and efficiency, and eventually business growth in their consumer health.
So in that career, what has been the best investment of your own time, energy, and money in your career?
I mean, for me, if I look back, spending time to learn skills to differentiate myself has been the best investment. I mean, I realized that when I was assigned the e-com role in Istanbul, maybe 14, 15 years ago in P&G. What I realized at that time, I was a sales guy and I was assigned to e-com role, which was a new role. They gave me that role because I had computer science background. I knew some technical things. But what I realized in a differentiated domain, when you do well, you have much more autonomy, much more freedom. You get promoted faster. And I liked my job a lot. And what I realized, I took the lesson, I need to spend some time every year to learn skills that will differentiate me from the herd, differentiate me from the others, and make me a bit more indispensable in my domain. And throughout my career, I did that a lot. So I moved to digital marketing because I realized e-com sales guys, there are so many of them. So, but somebody knowing e-com and digital marketing is rare. So I learned that. Then I learned retail media specifically. Then I had trainings and assignments on disruptive innovation development in big corporations, like working with startups. And right now it's AI. And while everybody or most people are learning how to use ChatGPT, I try to differentiate and I'm studying philosophy right now, because what I realized is thinking two steps ahead in a world, in a data-rich world where all answers are out there, asking the right questions will make the difference. So, and philosophy is a very good domain to teach you how to ask the right questions and how to frame good answers. So I recommend everybody to spend time learning skills to differentiate themselves.
And philosophy is quite broad. So where have you started, or where is your area of focus within that field?
I'm actually taking an undergrad degree in an online university. So taking all the 4 years of classes for history of philosophy, all types of philosophical domains. And yes, there's, as you say, it's a big domain, but combining with my work life, I think this is the biggest benefit. If you take a book of Immanuel Kant, Kierkegaard, Wittgenstein, yes, there are great ideas. Maybe many of them are not applicable, but throughout the books, you realize how people asked so many great questions to untangle very complex topics. And I think, to me, this will be a key differentiator in the coming years for people working in data, AI, where technology will do many, many things, will have many answers. Asking the right questions will be the key differentiator.
Could you give me an example of a better question that you ask now that you wouldn't have asked before the course?
I mean, for example, first-party consumer data. And I mean, it helps if you look at the mainstream discussions. It's how we can better collect, oh, there is this data privacy regulations, we will lose access to many types of data, etc. But it helps you to ask why we are doing this at the end of the day, and are we using that data effectively? In long time in my career, I was asked to collect more data. And recently, what I realized, actually, the reasons we are using that data are creating more efficient marketing, more effective marketing. And we can do those things without that data. So it helps me asking the right questions and challenge the status quo within the company and deliver better impact also with much, much less data.
So I think we might come back to this later. I hope we do. You raise a very provocative point there. But what I would like to know is what advice do you find yourself giving to people when it comes to data-driven marketing? What is that one bit of advice you find yourself coming back to most often?
To me, it's hands-on keyboard experience. I mean, especially for people like me who spend most of their time in big corporations. In the early stages of the careers, you do a lot of hands-on stuff. But as you go up the ladder, there are a lot of good agency partners who do the work for you. And you lose that hands-on keyboard experience. And you become in a position where you hear the developments, and you hear people from your team or your agencies coming to you with recommendations. You can trust them, you can decide. But being far from the trenches, I think, is not a good position, at least for me. So I recommend people to continue to have hands-on keyboard touches and be on the trenches. And it's quite easy to do. For example, you can have a simple blog website. You can have an Instagram account from zero, where you just put effort to grow it, or you put effort to drive traffic to website, or you set up a DTC business, small one, not much of your time, or try to sell a product in Amazon and do all those little things like SEO, Google Ads, YouTube marketing, Instagram Reels marketing yourself for your small sidekick if you don't have hands-on work at the work. So as a result, I highly recommend people to keep that side throughout their career, because it grounds you really well into the reality.
I've only heard that a few times on this podcast, two or three times in the last few years, and it always strikes me as a very intelligent thing to do. Just a small side hustle, just to understand the basics of the things that you mentioned, and give you real power in conversations, because if you're talking to someone about a website or a digital marketing campaign or whatever it is, if you've done it yourself, even at a small level, then that tiny bit of experience puts you in a completely different realm to someone who's never touched it. So I back that completely. You become one of them as opposed to on the other side of a fence with no actual experience.
Exactly. Also, like while working with agencies, it's kind of you are hiring someone to do part of the job. And I mean, although they are good partners, you need to have a very good brief to tell them what to do. But if you know the details yourself, it increases the quality of the discussions a lot. And you can go into details and become much better one team with the agents.
And also, I mean, I don't work for an agency anymore and things might have changed in the last 6 years, but there was a lot of people in agencies who'd spend the weekend learning up about something and then pretending it to the client like they're an expert. In reality, they'd only spent 5 hours or 10 hours or maybe a week longer than the person they were having the conversation with. So I think that if you spend those 5 or 10 hours, then quite often you could be on a par with the people who are supplying to you. That's not always the case, but I've definitely seen that over the years. But anyway, I'm sure it's a lot better now and that doesn't happen.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Madfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com.
We're going to move on to your shiny new object. Your shiny new object is reporting creative and media analytics together. That sounds obvious what that is. So can you help us understand why that's your shiny new object and why you're passionate about that being the future of data-driven marketing?
Yes. So when I started my role in Bayer, we had a lot of external benchmarking to help company to modernize overall marketing efforts. And few different sources of data showed the same thing, which is for a marketing campaign effectiveness, creatives makes around 50 to 60% of the impact. And the rest is the media buying and the targeting. And we internally ask this question, okay, let's say media part is 50% of the impact. Creative itself is the 50% of the impact, to make it simple. But when you look at the organizations, they are two separate organizations. And it's a handoff between the two organizations. You know, media team buys and says, send me the creatives, and creative teams, give me the brief, I'll give you the best creative. But there was no complete review of a campaign having media and creative together in the same room. So we started with that problem. And I simply ask, you know, we have simple media reports, you know, by platform, by brand, by campaign, which audience, what are the impressions and performance KPIs by campaigns. Most of us see them. And I said, can we add creatives to it? So what I meant was in a, for example, YouTube campaign, there are multiple lines, but I'd like to see which creative we show to which audience. And I'd like to see the creative level details of the performance. And then a lot of people said, yes, but you need a huge creative taxonomy, you need to match everything. And yes, it seemed like a mammoth task, but our partners, 55, helped us to connect all the dots. And simply magic happened, because what we realized at an aggregate level, you can easily say, this marketing campaign performed well, or this marketing campaign doesn't perform well. With the creative details, then we have started to see the other 50% of the equation. We started to see within a campaign, certain creatives actually worked well, but certain ones didn't. So the aggregate data doesn't show you that. And similarly, on the other side, we were saying, this creative is not working. But we realized for maybe four audiences, it didn't work. But for one audience, it was working really well. So it was an eye-opener for us. And we started to roll out this tool for all our markets. And we have more than 20,000 creatives analyzed. And with the help of the latest AI technologies, we started to generate several insights. And one of the key things we realized, and again, it's you can't see that without the joint reporting, is in a campaign, if you have multiple audiences with tailored creatives, you have a much better performance, almost 15% higher performance, ROI performance, than a campaign with just one creative to a mass audience. So this was for us a key pivotal moment to start what we call internally precision marketing program, to roll it out and started to increase our precision marketing-like campaigns in our digital space. So I stop here to hear your questions, if you have any, because I can talk for hours.
As can I, but it's a short podcast, so let's try and keep it on track. So I'm curious to know, you work with a supplier and you connected the dots. Can we sort of drill into that a little bit? How did you connect the dots? Were you tagging, you were running multiple ads and then tagging each ad, or were you tagging creatives within the ad? Were you tagging visuals and messaging or format? Like, can you help, without giving too much away, can you help me understand how you produced statistically unstructured, reliable data?
Yeah. So what we realized is, at first, we were thinking we have, let's say, 20,000 creatives, and we have hundreds of campaigns every month. So, and those creatives are being used in them. So somehow there needs to be, we need to have an ID to match everything. But it was very complex. What 55 team helped us to discover was, we were actually able to pull all the creatives from their accounts. So they have the technical knowledge. I remember there was one of them was called Oculus Script, I guess. It helps you to retrieve all the creatives from the ad account. So we didn't need to do any mixing, matching, or ID taxonomy work. We just run the ads. And from the ad accounts, we were able to pull back all the videos, display ads, and all the creatives we use matched with the line of that campaign. So it might be a bit technical, but in short, this was a huge shortcut for us. Without any taxonomy or tagging effort, we were able to pull back all the creatives matched with the campaign lines. So imagine YouTube DV360 campaign, which has multiple lines, and each line has a corresponding creative that is pulled from the system. And as a result, you can easily see this creative was shown in that platform to that audience at that time. And this is the amount of impressions this specific creative had, and this is the result.
And how did you work out whether it was the visual or written element that was the driver of the outcome that you wanted?
Yes, that's a good point, because when you have all this together, it opens up the Pandora's box. It opens up in completely exponential set of data which you didn't look before. And it's extra work for both media people, both creative people. So we had to change two things. Number one, we hold hands, meaning we didn't let it out and everybody figuring out what to do with it. We actually worked it ourselves and extracted insights each month. You know what? For example, if you have this audience, these type of creatives work better. Short forms work better, or long forms work better. Or for this brand, having a human in the creative works better. We started little by little. If you have more than two creatives in one campaign, it's better than having just one campaign, one creative. And we started to share those insights internally with the brand teams. And they were like, wow, how did you know that? Or how did you come up with this insight? And then we start to help people use and experiment with it. We are still scratching the surface. There are hundreds of parameters you can look at the creative and correlate it with the campaign performance. But we are going step by step. For example, right now we can see when we increase the creative quality, which we measure with Creative X, we can see the campaign effectiveness increase because now we have creatives matched with campaigns and we have the creative quality scores attached to it. And you can easily see the correlation between the creative quality and the campaign performance.
So how do you plan a campaign? So you say you're scratching the surface. So where's your ambition? What happens next? So say you're launching some NPD for one of your brands in a key market. How do you approach that to make sure the data that's coming back is A, reliable, and B, drives a better media outcome?
Exactly. So how we do that is we can't do it centrally, only me and few people driving this. So what we are doing right now, number one, organizationally, now we combined media and creative work stream. We have one global head of media and creative. So that is organizationally connecting the both work streams. And secondly, with our agency partners, we have reviews, both of them together, and looking at those reports where media and creative together. And this is a habit we started to have at market level. What happened in the last month? Let's look at it, but not a creative review. Both media and creative agencies and brands see everything together. And the results and insights that are coming from those meetings are much more actionable. Because in the past, creative team were producing it, but they didn't get the media feedback. And media team was reviewing their media plans, and they were mostly looking at efficiency of or the reach of the media campaign, but they were missing the creative angle. Right now, we can say, dear creative agency, these type of creatives don't work in this platform or for this audience. But this audiences in these platforms respond really well to this type of creative. So let's work on a more tailored, personalized creative approach in the upcoming campaigns for those audiences. And similarly for media agency, we can give them, and based on the briefs, which type of audience buys we should focus on to activate the set of creatives we have. One interesting insight also, when you have both of those things, is you see the creative utilization. Because you produce thousands of creatives and then you pull the actual usage, and then you realize some of them are not used at all or used very little. So this also helps inform in the future how much creative we should produce and to drive much more efficiency in the creative supply chain.
So you're preaching to the converted, really, because obviously our business operates in a similar area. But what I'm curious to know is, you're right, it's proven, it's data-driven, you have the media and creative analytics on a variety of different inputs to know what works. But that sometimes, in my experience, isn't enough to get people to stick with it, to follow your advice. So what kind of barriers are you having internally with this new way of thinking and operating?
It's a good question. I was thinking that, I think there's a quote, I will start from a theoretical lens. There's a quote attributed to Steve Jobs. If we asked people, we wouldn't have invented the iPhone, he said, supposedly. But this is the same thing. When we ask, is the data-driven marketing team, when we ask, guys, what type of reports are you looking for? Nobody told us to connect media and creatives. So when we did that, we created also a lot of extra work for people, and or some uncomfortable insights are surfaced, and or they had to spend much more time to extract additional insights. But this is why we did, and we are still doing the initial work for them, helping them understand. And when they understand, eventually, maybe it's extra work, but I think it also helps them to do their job better. And we start to incorporate usage of this platform and incorporating those insights into individual people's work streams and also our agency partners' work scopes, so that we start talking on a common data-driven approach.
Emre, I could really talk about this for the rest of the week, but unfortunately we're at time now. So if someone wanted to get in touch with you about the things we've been talking to today, where would you like them to do that? And what makes a message that you respond to?
So they can reach me out on LinkedIn, and I would be happy to respond back. So that's it from my side, and I would be happy to chat even more, especially on the philosophy part, on a separate discussion if you want.
Well, philosophy doesn't come up very much in this podcast, but I appreciate you bringing it up, and thank you for giving us a granular insight into how you're doing data-driven marketing. Thanks so much for your time, Emily.
Thank you too, Tom.
Hi. Just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.